This is an example of speech.
All our history of broiling war.
Welcome to Tell Me What to Think, a free from oversight and free of charge, thoughtfully improvised, expletive deleted, details expanded, whistle blow hard, evergreen topical heat wave of a weekly conversation turned podcast, in which we discuss politics, global affairs, current events, music, literature, social media, and anything else that bubbles up from the unmoderated comment sections in our brains. We urge you to join us and tell us what you think. You can contact us at tmwttpod@gmail.com. I'm Peter Albro. You can contact me on Twitter at BloatedNemesis. And I have with me, as always and forever, Charles Minnick, who is on Twitter at Green_Weird, which is WYRD. This episode, we have weak thoughts about free speech and how Democrats should be talking about challenges from the left. A deep dive, globe-trotting adventure of a segment focusing on how international affairs are important to Americans, at least as a warning. And closing thoughts with a hashtag rotten cabinetry update. Prepare to get righteous and reactionary. This is Tell Me What to Think. Time to get on our soap pod and tell you what to think. Now for some weak thoughts.
Waste your life in a struggle for power. All men thus reduced to please. So fucking just do whatever you please.
Alright. Welcome to Tell Me What to Think. Starting off with some weak thoughts. I am here at Charles's house. Hi, Charles.
Hey, Pete.
We're doing a live, not live streaming. This is not a YouTube channel, but live recording in person. Remember to do all the stuff. You can find me on Twitter at BloatedNemesis. Charles is on Twitter at Green_Weird. There are fireworks you may be hearing going off in the background because we are recording on Independence Day, 4th of July, in Beloit, Wisconsin, which is where we are. They love their fireworks, even though it's like 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
It's been going for days.
it's just noise at this point, so that's cool. It gives some color and flavor. What else should I say? Like share and like our podcast and rate and review it on Apple, Google, Stitcher, Podcast Addict. And you can put hashtags on Twitter, TMWTT. You can email the podcast at TMWTTPOD@gmail.com.
And if you want, start a conversation on Stone Duck Media or our Facebook group.
Yes, our Facebook page. You can like the Facebook page. Alright, so it is Independence Day, it's 4th of July, so later in the program we're going to have an international segment, of course.
That seems appropriate.
It's important. Hey, I mean, I suppose the Declaration of Independence was a foreign policy move.
Yeah.
Right? That's...
We're becoming a foreign entity.
Yeah. So, you know, America's been dealing with other countries since the beginning. It's what you do. Speaking of, let's know. What's the big news for you from the past week? I think we mentioned it last time, but that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has been like all over the news.
Yeah, just all over. They've embraced her in a huge way.
Yeah, she has kind of been a little bit of a media darling. I mean, she's also taking heat, mostly from Democrats.
Well, then, like Shapiro or Ben Shapiro was trying to catfish her on Twitter to get her into a debate.
Yeah, there's definitely some. I don't know. It almost feels honorable in our modern political media landscape where there's some conservatives who are giving her heat just because she calls herself a socialist. But it's not like it's a little old fashioned in a way.
Kind of.
Like, I ideologically disagree with you. Let's engage. Where, I mean, it might be like poor engagement, but
right.
But you know,
like have a discussion about it.
Yeah, like what is Nancy Pelosi like? She doesn't bring up specific things Ocasio-Cortez believes when she like goes after her politically. It's just the general.
Yeah, they like to attribute it to demographics, even though like she won in mostly white and gentrifying neighborhoods. Like, Astoria was where she had her biggest bastion of support, which is, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it feels simplistic just to call it demographic change, although, I mean, let's not ignore how demographics can affect things.
Sure, but did you see her Twitter pictures of her shoes?
No.
Oh, she wore out those shoes. That's how she won.
Walking, yeah, and which is, yeah, I've seen her always attribute it to just working hard, and actually some of the election experts I listened to afterwards, they always brought up demographics, but they also, the good ones all mentioned, like, she just also, like, she, the thing she would attack Crowley, who she beat, for was, like, not being engaged in the district.
Mm-hmm.
So in her campaigning, that was her big thing, to engage in the district.
Right. Which lives in Virginia.
That's very old school politics.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, literally turning people out, and she was on that social media game really early on.
Yeah.
Getting in front of any camera that would have her.
Yeah. No, and you kind of, like, sort of need that. You need someone who understands, you know, not to be afraid of publicity.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
just be honest with who you are.
I mean, I don't think there's, not to shoehorn Trump into this discussion, but that's not, you know, that's a strength of his. You may hate watching him, but he
owns certain parts of himself.
He's not afraid of a camera, and he understands publicity is how people know who you are.
Some,
for some reason, which we don't know, people like him. Some people.
Yeah, we'll still keep working on that answer.
Woo, America!
America!
Yeah, so...
But yeah, the attacks from, like, Tammy Duckworth and...
I'm surprised by that. I like Tammy.
Right?
I like any Democratic senator named Tammy. It's just a rule I have.
Yeah, I think it's coming from a misplaced understanding. Like, that. I think those politics would play really well. I mean... Bernie Sanders nearly won. Didn't he win Illinois? He won Wisconsin resoundingly.
I don't remember if it was Ocasio-Cortez herself, but it was pointed out after Duckworth made those comments about it, how would it work in the Midwest, socialist, democratic, whatever she called word she used, that, like, Bernie's best area in the 2016 primary was actually probably the Midwest.
Yeah. Milwaukee was once the capital of socialism.
Which is what Hillary did poorly in the general.
Mm-hmm.
She underperformed there. Bernie overperformed. I mean, it's hard to say for sure he would have won, but it did to say...
it wouldn't play in the Midwest.
It just seems on its surface untrue.
I feel like you could make better arguments. Like, you could probably make some pretty good moral arguments about why healthcare for all and subsidized child care and... things like that could, you know, really lift boats, so to speak.
Oh, yeah. And what have the Republicans been doing? It's on different issues, but they sort of moralize everything.
Yeah.
Because, like, if economically you're, like, more to the left, then they turn you into, like, an evil communist. Like, they moralize, like, taxes and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I guess.
You're a communist. You're all quantified economic analysis.
It feels like saying it. So, like, politics is a lot about saying why something is better.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like someone like Hillary Clinton, and maybe she's not even the best example of this, but, you know, Pelosi talks about the why.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, it's a little bit over people's heads, whereas someone like Bernie just talks about the better.
Yeah.
Who cares why it's better? It's better. Like, it's our moral responsibility. That makes it better. More people will be happy. That makes it better. It's very little d democratic.
Yeah. It appeals to, like, everybody, which is why he played so well in very independently minded communities.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it unrealistic? I'm not sure it's unrealistic to try to promise things anymore. Like, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, for instance, was, I don't know, probably the leftist president we've ever had, and he made clear what he was going to do from the beginning.
So, yeah. People like that shit.
Yeah, people responded, and he voted him in 4 times.
He was very popular. Even in the, I mean, he trounced Hoover, I think, and well, I don't know about a landslide, but I think he trounced Hoover in the first, like, Yeah, so...
Most incumbent presidents don't get ousted.
Yeah, that's... Although...
Bush... Bush broke a promise.
I suppose it wasn't even popular back... Or it wasn't even common for incumbents to lose back then, actually.
Maybe in the late 19th
lost,
century.
But
yeah.
That's because he got attacked from his own side. I just started a book about that, actually. about TR and Taft. And maybe someday I'll do a Tell Me What to Read about it. Grown-up book review. So that's fireworks on the left. maybe 4th of July is a good time to bring up this little nugget, an aftershock from Charlottesville. Only because in the article I'm reading on the ABA Journal, the guy has a American flag t-shirt on. So very, very appropriate. And a camo, rare, Make American Great Again hat.
Oh, Kessler, yeah.
So Kessler, Jason Kessler, was an organizer of the Charlottesville Unite the Right rally from last summer. And there was a little, mostly inconsequential, ruling where he was awarded $5 by Judge Robert Downer Jr., not Robert Downey, and found that a woman who was there, or actually who was protesting outside the assault trial of DeAndre Harris in March, said, fuck you, asshole crybaby, to Jason Kessler, and he sued her for $500, and the judge awarded him $5.
Under an anti-dueling statute, that seems so archaic.
Yeah, under an anti-dueling, yes. Yeah, you'd think that, like, the House of Burgesses or whatever it is in Virginia is like, wait, what? We have that?
Of course we do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it really a duel if you don't really have a weapon to in which to engage someone who...
Apparently not.
Well, he had $5 worth of damage to his character from that.
Yeah. I'm bringing this up because Drunkalocetus on Twitter, hashtag TMWTT'd the article, he wrote, a disingenuous abuse of free speech and civility by the people who say bigoted shit and decry political correctness. Kind of a callback to our discussion last week about the Red Hen and Sarah Sanders and Maxine Waters and all that.
Yeah. That's only going to get worse, but...
Why do you say it's only going to get worse?
Because of the reactionary response to nonviolent, participation, which is what notionally the Democrat, you know, obstruction, like actual obstruction of government action. Yeah, the reaction to that will, you know, draw violence. I mean, did you see the Proud Boy rally in Portland?
Oh, yeah, I forgot to put that on the... Yeah, talk about that.
Yeah, the Proud Boy is a white supremacist organization out in the Northwest.
At Charlottesville, I thought.
Really?
Well,
of course they were. Everybody
was
there.
Yeah,
so, yeah, they had a rally in downtown Portland, and it broke out into a melee, and some people got sent to the hospital. One guy got nearly stomped to death in the street, because the police let the Proud Boys run past him into the counter-protesters.
That's kind of becoming a theme amongst when the violence breaks out, is the police standing down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's... I don't know what to take on that. I sort of get them not wanting to pick a side, but aren't you picking a side?
They can pick a side.
Yeah, I mean,
letting them,
are.
Yeah.
Yeah, it feels like a misguided...
Yeah.
I don't know. Or worse, it could be.
I mean, they took away the signs, I guess. So the alt-right weren't prepared necessarily, and I didn't see any weapons and evidence on the Antifa side, but...
I didn't deep dive into this, but I saw... like some tweets and the like about that came off to me as divisive bot propaganda, like spreading shit about Antifa, like having like, what about the crowbar one of them had or something like that? I don't remember the exact pipe or something like that.
Yeah. Okay. Well.
I doubt it's
mixed
true.
Mixed reports of weaponry. Yeah. But yeah, I don't. see why the cops... That would be more reason for the cops to keep them separated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah,
isn't that their job? Is to like get in between? Like,
yeah, public safety. Yeah. Something about that. I don't know.
It just.
Oh, and Wheeler, of course, the city's mayor was on vacation that day.
Oof.
You kind of had to have planned that, right?
I'm not going to be in the office.
Get out, I'm out. I mean, what do? Stand up to the police in their fascist ways, or stay mayor?
Okay, so you think. At least low-level violence like that kind of increases, and the sort of, maybe not defense of throwing the punch, but being in the place to throw the punch, will free speech will be used, at, you know, to have protests, and
yeah.
Will
freedom
be
assembly.
Kind of...
Well, I mean, look back at Charlottesville. You could see, like, some of the things that they wanted to do. If that guy hadn't misfired his 9mm when he was shooting into the crowd,
mm-hmm.
that Charlottesville would have gotten, like, exponentially worse.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that was kind of a dry run for what they ultimately want to do.
Yeah, and the problem with taking a position of being... the pro-free speech when you're also, like, the pro-hate group is, they are on the side of free speech. I mean, it's hard to say you can't say that.
Well, sure, but part of their ideology
even if they're disingenuous.
Yeah, but part of their ideology is, like, fundamentally disenfranchising other people from that freedom.
Yeah.
So they
I don't
see why they have a right to that argument. You cannot say you cannot use the armor of free speech and then, like...
But you can.
You can.
Important
mm-hmm.
to us here in little old America.
Sure.
And how, I don't know what, and how...
Why it's important.
Yeah, why it's important. Why it's maybe not always well done.
Yeah.
In America.
In America, especially.
So, we're going to kind of do this through the lens, then, of some local, not local, some international stories. The opposite of what I just said.
Local to somebody else's stories.
Yes, to someone else. It's local. Yeah, maybe that's the root of the problem here. That's not my problem. Not my backyard. My big American backyard. There have been a couple elections within the past couple weeks. Big, important countries. Mexico and Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
So, in Turkey, we talked about it on the pod before, Erdogan...
But yeah, Erdogan won, and now he has to own whatever mistakes and problems that he's created in the past decade, and now, with all of his hands on all of the levers, well, he will be able to take credit for anything, but it looks like the money interests are taking a contrarian stance to Erdogan, and... are making the lira, as we talked about before, plummet even more. So there isn't international financial support. Turkey might end up having to go to the IMF for financial support, like, pretty quickly.
And he is delusional? Or...
He thinks he can do giant infrastructure programs of dubious value and have that, like, paper over... problems in the economy. Like, Turkey's been hot recently because it's part of the European, maybe not part of the common market, but they have trade relations with the European Union, so they can manufacture in Turkey and sell to the European Union at a relatively good profit. Money has been chasing that, but now that the economy is kind of buckling,
mm-hmm.
and there's a trade war on, that is no longer as appetizing, and Erdogan's own anti-EU stance doesn't really help that carry trade either maintain its profitability because he's like putting two fingers up in like May and Merkel's faces and trying to buy the S-400 system from Russia.
Huh. So you would describe his vision for Turkey as a little confusing?
Uninspired?
Yeah.
Contradictory? I mean, the guy's kind of... from all the legal things that have seemed to surround him, he's corrupt. Like, super corrupt and trying to make a lot of money off of this. And now he's... this is like the early phase of kleptocracy where he just... he's kind of using the state for his own benefit, but now he's really going to start using the state for his own personal enrichment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you think you're untouchable.
Mm-hmm.
pardon me. Why do we think Americans... why should Americans care?
Because, well, we have a unitary executive authority, like Turkey wanted. This, what we have is what Erdogan finally got. And so with, you know, looking at a corrupt autocrat in an increasingly executive authority, we can see, you know, what, how that might work for America if all of a sudden we had a super kleptocratic president with an authoritarian bent who is willing to make friends with people he probably shouldn't, or enemies of also people he shouldn't.
Yeah. Like what kind of government you find in other countries and their rises and their falls, and I mean that can be really enlightening to people here. I suppose it could maybe radicalize people here too.
Well, to get out of the oligopoly of democratic ownership. I mean, parties in other countries like rise and fall within like decades.
Yeah.
Within one decade. Like, look what happened to Golden Dawn. They were a
flash
in the pan political movement in Greece.
Yeah, you don't see that here. Now, does that mean that, like, it's still kind of happening here, but it's slower, so you kind of have to, like, step back?
But in the 19th century, we had more parties rise and fall.
Yeah, that's true.
And yet we had only two for the entire 20th century, basically.
So
this another Bob Follett's win in 1924 of Wisconsin.
This may seem like not the most patriotic thing to maybe say today on the 4th of July.
Hey, dissent is the most patriotic thing.
I'm not even going to be like that, like fiery, but by any means, nothing like that. But seems to me that 19th century United States is a different country from 20th and 21st century United States.
Yeah.
It just, I think, I don't think there's one moment where it changed. Like, we didn't, I mean, we had the Civil War, but to me it's even like, we went past the Civil War.
It's like the Progressive Era kind of changed the country.
Yeah, it did, a lot.
World War One.
Yeah.
Woodrow Wilson's period, basically.
Yeah, it's hard to find the exact moment, and maybe there wasn't one, but like, if you look at, I don't know, 1850 America to 1950 America, it seems like a totally different country, yet there wasn't a major overhaul like you see in a lot of the countries where whole governments...
rise and fall,
there's coups and...
well, the change is more institutional here, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, women got the right to vote in 19... what? Oh, God, I'm feeling terrible.
That's 20, right?
Yeah. That's 20. 24, yeah. Early 20th century.
So, another big election where they've had some, kind of actually, I would call Mexico's changes in the past decade or two institutional changes. They haven't had a I think they amended their constitution. They didn't make a new one.
Right. Well, they got the PRI out of power a decade ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a huge,
sea change. How did they do that?
Electoral means. They just voted them out.
Yeah. Hey, they weren't any more, they weren't any less ensconced in power than the Republicans are now with all their fucking gerrymandering and PACs and shit. And, hey, they did it.
Yeah, it can be done with the right political movement.
I think their guy now, Obrador, who
AMLO
won. Do you know how to pronounce his full name?
AMLO is the abbreviation of his names that they call him,
Yeah, and so he won the election quite handedly. I believe his party kind of not swept, not every seat, but is the majority in the houses of.
Oh, wow. You got the whole kit and caboodle.
If it wasn't a super majority, it was at least majority.
Okay. So progressive reforms in Mexico with a slight anti-U.S. bent.
There seems to be like a little bit, though, of a cult of personality, Latin American dictator, leftist dictator thing going on with him.
That's too early to say.
He, like, smells and talks like it.
You know, he's more like that guy in Uruguay who lived in his, like, the house that he'd always lived in. The guy who was... The president who legalized weed there.
Okay.
He was more of a... He had been a revolutionary when he was young, but went to jail and came out and became a politician. And, yeah, seemingly he was a pretty good one.
Is it the current president?
No.
Oh, then I'm not going to be able to help you.
Okay.
but Open Door, I don't know, like, the John Oliver piece on him had some, like, just good videos that were, like, and actually, I don't even think the John Oliver piece was actually selling him as being, like, a dangerous at all. Uh-huh. But some of the, some of the quotes that he's had, and I don't know, man, They smell like something that's politically dangerous for them. Though socially, yes, great. And I don't know what will that be. I mean, he's been like Mayor of Mexico City. Yeah, but he's brushed elbows with corruption before. He just hasn't. I mean,
seemingly made money off of it.
You know, I don't know. Mm. I mean, he tried to name himself president, and he said the election was fraudulent, which some people still think it was, okay. But...
The PRI totally robbed him in 2006.
It still has that kind of, you know, feel to it, like, he blocked off the streets and no one could come and, like...
Oh, that's Central American protest.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I don't want to decry the guy and, like, go to war with Mexico. I'm not saying like that. Yeah. He has some tendencies... That as he's getting older, maybe the brain goes a little bit. They might become, but if he has like a one term presidency, does some good institutional changes to help people, and then bows out after 6 years or whatever their term is, 5 or 6 years.
Six years, I think.
Okay, that's totally fine. But you know, I think okay. So like one thing for me that helped inform my take on domestic politics that's been influenced by foreign politics is learning more about Hugo Chavez and his rise to power as a big cult of personality thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the only guy who can fix things syndrome.
Which is...
And I don't inherit... I do not trust that. When someone says that...
You shouldn't trust him, right? It's like, we should all bow to your mistakes. No, we've talked about this before.
Yeah. And Obrador has that feel to him. That's all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, hey, that doesn't
he's got
mean
a pretty broad coalition, though.
Yeah, but it also doesn't mean that someone who says that, maybe they're not the only person. That doesn't mean they can't help it.
Right.
Like, inherently, it's just that if they start taking themselves too seriously and their words, their rhetoric too seriously,
mm-hmm.
and it seems like Hugo Chavez. You know, was that, and Maduro is that, right? You want to talk about Venezuela?
Oh, yeah.
What's going on there now?
Huge inflation. Oh, and it's come out in the last, day, I guess. I didn't see it before today, but apparently Trump had to be convinced multiple times to not invade Venezuela.
Yeah, well, he kept asking. He kept asking. That article was great. I don't have it up here to give...
attribution.
Yeah. he brought up to four Latin American presidents.
No, everybody who was at that conference.
I thought it was just four. Okay, maybe it was more. But he brought up to a large, and he was essentially ordered by his staff not to bring up invading Venezuela, and so he prefaced his
remarks,
his tirade with, "My staff told me not to say this."
And then approached each one of the, like, it was all the leaders of Central and Latin. Central and South America, he went around to them personally and was like, "So, how about invading Venezuela?" "No, sir, that's not a good idea."
So it looks like this was reported originally by the Associated Press.
Mm-hmm.
So Yeah, and he brought up, it was interesting, he brought up an article, he brought up, well, why not, though? This has worked before in Latin America with Panama and
Grenada.
Yeah.
Into like
which I don't know a lot about
countries.
The history of those.
Vastly smaller countries that were okay. Targeted operations.
Yeah, that's what stuck out to me. Is like I don't know exactly how effective that was in the long run, but it's apples and oranges. It's,
yeah, right? That's like...
It's Iraq and Grenada.
Yeah, it's like...
it's like Iraq and Grenada. Like, Iraq would be a much more comparable thing, right?
Oh, easily, right? It's just the terrain alone in Venezuela. So.
Fuck.
The rainforest.
Oh, and even the, like, the hills where, in the western part of the country. No, fuck that.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to fight there.
No. yeah, like, the military is like...
You know, this is like Trump's line, though. He always talks about wanting to seize a country with fucking oil supplies, and Venezuela has, like, the biggest proven reserves in the Western Hemisphere.
So, actually, really good point, because he talks about our past incursions into countries, Iraq, Afghanistan, talks about why we haven't taken their natural resources, brings this up with other countries on how we can get their natural resources. He seems to be clearly broadcasting something that he is trying to find his best to try to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's trying to get our military in somewhere, and if he does, he is going to do his best to
steal.
Steal the natural resources.
19th century colonialism all over again.
Yeah, like, he must have been in, what, he was like a schoolboy in, what, the 50s or something. He must have been, like, taught by, like, a 130-year-old teacher or something.
Oh, nice.
Like, some British
colonial.
No, he
went to a military academy after he was a bully, so, yeah, he got taught by fucking... military officers who may or may not have... Yeah, okay.
So they have high inflation there.
Maduro's holding on. Collapsing.
Maduro's holding on.
Somehow.
Right? Are there large... I remember seeing
like
months ago, like, big protests?
Mm-hmm. Like, I think there's... No. There are the huge protests, like, there's just too much hunger. And widespread violence that people can't, like, get out to protest in quite that way. And according to the latest reports that I've seen, I think AP reported it, that people have been reduced to bartering. So, like, the currency is useless. The central government is kind of collapsing, or collapsing in on itself and getting harder, turning into a bigger, or harder nodule of support around Maduro.
Wow.
Yeah, it's becoming a problem for everybody in South America already because the refugees, desperate people trying to flee the country, but if it hasn't become a problem for America yet, it will be soon. I'm not saying invasion is the right idea.
Yeah. What?
There's got to be some.
How should that be? If you were, let's say you were a national security or foreign policy advisor for, just say some... random candidate for Congress, Senate, whatever.
You gotta get Maduro out. Like, give him a soft exit somewhere. Like,
okay.
Exile? You could get exiled somewhere in Africa, and then we could transition Venezuela to democracy again.
So what, what's the best way to go about, so okay, you get him out, okay, here's some villa in fucking Angola or some shit.
Whatever.
Okay. Like, hey, have a fun time. Okay. So, what do you use as the institutional infrastructure in place to go about
that? Well, there's still an army in an assembly. They just kind of, you can use, you can have the assembly kind of undo the constitutional damage that Maduro wrought by trying to instill himself without term limits and executive authority. Then, yeah, the military can hopefully keep order, but... It'll require big, deep pockets and a large heart from other countries, which does not seem to be in evidence of late.
How does their nationalized oil company factor in?
Citgo? Or no, what's the name of it? It's one of the big oil chains here in America.
Yeah, I was just gonna not try and name it. Sorry. I'll look it up. But, I mean, how does that...
It kind of keeps the government open, like that's their biggest source of foreign currency right now. And after Chavez left, and you know, he was charismatic enough to elicit support from the surrounding region, and Castro was still in power.
It's called the PDVSA.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Okay. So it would at least provide some money to like operate the government.
Right. But you know, they don't have much. If they're not getting more like currency for medicines and basic humanitarian supplies, it's a problem.
All right, so let's shift on over to another part of the world. A country that's causing some headaches for its neighbors in Europe, Poland, So what was the main law that they passed there? They're really firing at the judiciary. Yeah, they're trying to force Supreme Court members out.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting because the person they nominated to like replace them, like the president can give an exception to the rule.
Yeah.
So his replacement is older than the person being forced out by the retirement rule. Like, come on. You can't just find a 50-year-old somewhere.
Right.
Like, you just had to be blatant about it. That's like, that's some, like, Trumpian bullshit. Just totally
This is like
shameless.
A third or fourth attempt. The first one was, like, just get rid of all of the judges except for who their attorney general wanted to keep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Because they moved, like, which department runs it and, like, where their, like, national prosecutor is, they're shuffling with the bureaucracy of it,
mm-hmm.
which puts certain positions under, either under legislative or more likely executive power.
Right, and the
ministerial power.
Yeah, your commission was, like, making an Article 7 problem out of it.
Yep, and so that's they called it the nuclear, in the article I read, they called the Article 7 thing the like, nuclear article or something of the EU, because it allows them to, like, all the other countries to start doing something to one, or kick them out, or whatever it is.
Hmm, okay, I mean, nuclear might seem...
Yeah, it was a little, like...
Maybe the dramatic. Shot across the bow?
Also, you need all the other countries to agree to it.
Yeah.
And so, like, if there's one other ally of that government...
Hungary?
Exactly. You can't do it, so... And they actually have a few now, sort of, Italy,
Austria.
I guess, and Austria, yeah.
Yeah. That's not going to find a receptive audience in the rest of the European Union.
And so it seems like the Polish troubles affect the stability of the EU.
Right.
And also it's, again, a model for...
What happens when you start messing with the judiciary.
And just in general, like the government. When you start changing these rules, giving more power to this person, and you know, it's very... It's if you... watch these other countries around the world, it starts like, hey, that seems familiar to me.
Right. Wait, we've seen this script before. Let's not do this.
Yeah, especially in this week after Anthony Kennedy announced his resignation. So, you know, the judiciary is a hot topic in here.
Still mad about that.
Last week we had a great conversation about it right before it was announced, essentially. Like,
yeah.
It really wouldn't have changed, like, a word of the conversation.
No, not really.
I listened to it. I checked. I edited. I'm like, no, this really almost pretty much holds true. So that's...
Oh, Malaysia, too. We should mention
that. That's then globe hop again to yet another continent. Malaysia, they had a big probe.
The 1MDB probe?
Yep, into their... former president, right?
Yeah. Prime minister.
Former prime minister, Najib Razak.
Mm-hmm.
Pictured here praying.
Yeah, it looks like he's throwing his mouth in shame.
Yeah, literally about to puke. Yeah, it's... I shouldn't make fun of how he prays. Just how he makes money.
Yeah.
So what was he doing?
He was robbing the place. Like, they attributed, like, $700 million that he directly stole out of the development... funds and just put into his own bank account. Then he got like $10 million more off of another part of it that they found so far.
Was he being shameless about it? Just like transfer? Or was he like?
I mean, I assume it was like this is after investigation, so he was funneling it through companies.
So yeah, it was done. Okay,
semi legalistically.
Again, sounds familiar.
Mm-hmm.
Emoluments.
But he made it a. thing when he got his Ministry of Finance he ordered them to cover it up.
Yeah.
And make the economy work despite how much he was stealing from it.
Yeah.
And yeah, he got voted out of office.
Did they seize all the funds?
I assume they have to, like, they. There's like five different countries. The article I read, or probably the one you're looking at, said it mentions Switzerland and like Singapore and the United States prominently. I'm not sure who the other two countries are. I don't think it mentioned them. But like some very close allies and places where that money would go, like sink to the bottom like a sinkhole.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're probably going to take all that money and hopefully give it back to Malaysia.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the financial...
Yeah.
Malfeasance by your leaders, yep. That's
an easy comparison.
But yeah, it's something to be wary of. Something to pay attention to.
So this is... Yeah, but that's what like a higher order of kleptocracy looks like. He's managed the state or directed the state to further the kleptocracy or the theft.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Instead of the stupid fucking... As usual, inept Trump version where it's just, I just take money, people can just bribe me.
The Supreme Court will be like, broad executive authority to take bribes in a couple years.
It's freedom of speech. Money is speech. They're just talking to me.
Yeah, money is speech.
Oh God, I shouldn't have said that argument out loud.
Speech is money, money is speech. So, let's then hop on over to... What is this? The only continent we haven't gotten to yet. Africa.
Oh, yeah. Good news.
A couple things in Africa. So, yeah, first we'll talk about Ethiopia. What's happening with Ethiopia?
There was a delegation, like, the foreign... Did we talk about this last week? The foreign minister of Eritrea came to Ethiopia.
Oh, yeah.
They had discussions, and that's been moving along.
So it's been going well.
Mm-hmm. The president of Eritrea was in the United Arab Emirates in the past couple of days for talks with their crown prince. Because the UAE has a base in Eritrea that they use to support their operations in Yemen. Like I say, for anybody who's like finds cultural anthropology interesting, like try to find footage. I'll try to post the Al Jazeera video I had of the prime minister arriving in Ethiopia. Or the foreign minister, because he gets greeted by like a whole line of varied religious figures.
Hmm.
Everybody from like the Easter, I assume it was an Eastern Orthodox bishop or cardinal to like a Benedictine monk.
Interesting. There was a big report in Politico by Wesley Morgan about behind the secret U.S. war in Africa. Despite Pentagon assertions, secret programs allow American troops to direct combat raids in Somalia, Kenya. Kenya surprised me. Did you know about Niger and other African nations?
It said 20. That article said there are 20 countries that they're currently conducting those 127E missions in.
And they did not name all of them in the article.
Nope. Like, some of them are, like, eight of them, they said, were in Africa. So that's, let's see, Kenya, Somalia, Niger, and that's also Cameroon, I'm sure, is one of them.
Mali.
That's three more.
So Mauritania, but Mauritania was brought up as one where they stopped.
They exited, yeah.
Chad, definitely, I think I've read that elsewhere.
And then probably Nigeria and Burkina Faso would be the other two.
Okay. And they are...
They
are operating with those governments' knowledge,
mm-hmm.
So it's not like it's secret to the place it's in.
Exactly. Well, not to the heads of
heads of state and their military.
I suppose those people probably have a better idea of what our American forces are doing than we do. Well, the people on the ground over there.
That's kind of what I was thinking. Like, how many, like, it seems like there should be more reporting on this. You just have to go through different
channels?
Yeah, then you'd be used to. And I'm not saying it's easy, like, hey, American National Security Reporter, hey,
go sit on the fucking ground
in Mali. Yeah. Like that book I reviewed, actually, though, a couple months ago, the Librarians of Timbuktu was written by a Washington Post journalist who fucking sat at a cafe in wherever that was in Timbuktu, I guess.
Yeah.
I think that part might have been in... Anyway, it's not important. But yeah, that's what he did. That's like how he did his reporting. He talked to people there. So it seems like...
It's possible.
Yeah. It just, you know, you probably have to deal with misinformation, not even intentional, just like accidental misinformation, because, you know, like, do the people know the difference between a French helicopter and an American one? If it's, I mean, are they marked?
Yeah, probably not. Well, it was probably with, probably not even with flags, now that you mention it.
And so, yeah. But anyways, it was a pretty extensive article. They quoted a former White House official who we were kind of thinking might be McMaster. It's someone who had a lot of knowledge and who's no longer there, so it doesn't necessarily
Or probably somebody in the National Security Council.
Yeah, or it could have been someone who was like one of his people. What's his name? Bolton kicked out.
Mm-hmm.
So we've talked about AFRICOM before. Short, why is it
terrible?
No. Well, okay, so I mean, you could say that because our military is involved in something terrible that is, of course, of interest to Americans. But is there, to me, there's like a long-term thing with Africa that we have to be really conscious of.
Yeah, well, it's the American form of diplomacy ever since 9/11. Like, the decreased power in the State Department is kind of a natural progression from that. And now we're seeing, like, the military is conducting all of our foreign affairs in, like, one of the mm-hmm. biggest continents.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, it's hard to make the best first impression with a gun and body armor.
Yeah.
You know.
Like NVGs, yeah. Those guys are pretty well kitted up, so.
Yeah. There's people being born every day, and if that's what they see of America, that's going to leave a bad taste. Even if it's done pretty professionally and well.
Right. Even if they're bringing up the standards of
fine
those
line.
Company, like those countries' armies, like association with those countries' armies gives us, you know, by that strange human property of transference, the same kind of qualities. Like, if that army has been seen
mm-hmm.
in other places, like, beating up people and otherwise repressing, then we're associating with that, and we have to own that.
Yeah, and it's like, even if they're not committing, like, atrocities, the army is a, at least until it's not, a wing of the government, and you know, there's going to be political opinions about the army, and it's not like a lot of these governments there are, like we were kind of talking about in general, are the longest, most stable governments. And so if there's a government turn, the U.S. Army, it's like, by default, will be the bad guy once the former government's no longer is popular.
Right.
It's
just creating enemies.
Yeah, it's hard to do it well. It's easy to do it poor.
Yeah.
All right, so that is that. I think the only other thing I wanted to bring up in our international segment is Estonia, kind of bringing it back to
America.
Actually how America works with the rest of the world through diplomats, or at least how we're supposed to.
Sure.
The U.S. diplomat, or ambassador to Estonia, which I would characterize, from what I know, Estonia as a, not a big powerful country, but a pretty strong ally of the U.S.
Yeah, enthusiastic ally.
They seem pretty American. In fact, their last president has, like, no accent and was, I believe, educated in America.
Of course.
He was really cool. I heard an interview with him. He teaches at Stanford now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he was awesome. He was tweeting before Donald Trump was, like, as a president, you know.
Oh, okay.
But a cool guy. He courted, you know, this is, like, not, like, a, what I'm about to read, it's not a, like, Huffington Post headline, this is from Foreign Policy. U.S. Ambassador to Estonia resigns in disgust after Trump anti-Europe rants. So this guy didn't like the way our president has been characterizing
the European Union.
Yeah, the European Union. By the way, it's James D. Melville Jr., a career diplomat and a member of the Foreign Service. So he was not a political appointee.
Hmm.
So surprise, surprise.
Right.
When I first saw that, I was like, did someone turn on Trump?
No.
Nope, it's just someone.
Yeah, holdover, apparently.
Just institutional morality, not that exciting. But,
I mean, that's the life of the diplomat. Like, either what Trump is saying is no longer in American interests, and so if you want to be a diplomat and fulfill your sworn oath to the Constitution and American foreign policy, basically, you have to resign. And the people who haven't resigned are putting their politics on their sleeve.
Yep.
Same thing with the ice
people. And the rest of the world seeing that sleeve.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Anything, closing thoughts you want to say about the international reporting and international...
It could be done a lot better because, you know, Americans aren't enthusiastic about foreign language education.
So we have to read it in English.
Yeah. So we have to read it in English. And we don't have that cultural background to, like, you know... For instance, when you learn German, for instance, you kind of have to learn about Germany. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, the... Yeah. So... You get that background, but a lot of reporters don't have that context because J school is a very specific and intense thing, like we talked about with Scott Gordon.
Yeah. Yeah, and it just seems like the stories don't catch fire here until they are like a blown out of proportion fire.
Like a real problem, or maybe just a flash in the pan.
Well, it's like, it doesn't. International stories don't seem to become popular here unless they can be used for, like, domestic political gain.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden it becomes a big thing. Yeah. I kind of feel like the 90s, we lost a little bit of that. It's like, you know, like, there's that, like, end of history, communism is dead, America's bringing in a Pax Americana... Oh, yeah, we won! Woo! Never have to think about the rest of the stupid world again. And I think there were certain things done in like the to change the world order that were good, but I think the American voting public was just put blinders on after that.
Yeah, we forgot.
And that's kind of when I was raised, and I sort of feel like my education sort of had like the only times they try and kind of talk about like. You know, like, you'd learn about, like, the Cold War, but even at that point, that was over with, you know, by the time you're learning history and stuff.
Yeah, it's actual history.
And so it was kind of like, and then the rest of the world is, there's a little trouble in Yugoslavia. It's pretty good right now. And it's like, okay, we don't need to learn anything now. And, like, in terms of, like, current events more than, like, history at the time.
Oh, yeah. When I was in school, I read all the history books and geography textbooks because we didn't read, like, most of them in school.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's like, did you ever learn in, let's say, yeah, like, middle school, high school, like, anything about China? I never learned shit about, like, I mean, modern-day China.
Yeah, well, if you read the book outside of class.
Well, sure, but, I mean, it wasn't taught.
No, it certainly wasn't.
And,
like, we've kind of messed that country up. I mean, Mao kind of had some justification to be anti-U.S. Because we kind of turned our back on him and China in general.
No, they picked World War II. We were allies until we weren't. And the only reason we stopped being your allies if you were said you're a communist. Or even, like, we're buddying up to other communists.
Mm.
Like, well, it's like, what do you mean, no?
At that point in, like, the 30s and early 40s, like, Mao didn't have a great relationship with Stalin. Stalin initially supported Chiang Kai-shek.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, no, I'm saying, like, even the Russians we allied with in World War II.
Right.
To a
point.
Some extent, you know, we weren't fighting them.
Yeah.
And, you know, our presidents met every now and then and shit.
Yeah.
And we... You know, because isn't it like Mao and Chiang Kai-shek put aside the differences,
sort of,
kind
of,
you know, during World War II and both fought off the Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seemed like, well, during, you know, they're always like, you know, we're fighting the fascists in World War II, but it's like, it seems like the United States government was so willing to create new enemies as soon as the fighting was wrapping up.
Well, even then, like, Roosevelt and the Department of Defense were picking winners. Like, they weren't supplying communist forces. They supplied Chiang Kai-shek to make sure he had a big arms supply at the end of the war.
And
then in 45, we occupied Tianjin until the communists rolled through in 49.
Yeah, and it... Yeah, I mean, I can't blame someone around that time for... I mean, I know, like, the history of Vietnam, where it's like... Ho Chi Minh wouldn't even, like, in the beginning, he wasn't even, like, calling himself a communist.
No.
He was just kind of, like,
reformist.
A leftist, reformist, mostly a nationalist, really, though, in terms of, like, we want Vietnam to be free.
Yeah.
Here's what I happen to think the way it should be governed is. But, and then it kind of just, it felt like it was, that was enough for someone in America to be like, they're communist. And it just put that wall up.
Yep.
Even if it's not a real wall, like in like Berlin or something. But.
An ideological wall that we have to throw bombs over.
I stopped building walls. Alright, we are back with some closing thoughts after taking a globe-trotting adventure. Well, let's do a quick update on one of my favorite prior segments, which is Rotten Cabinetry. Scott Pruitt. There's two things with Scott Pruitt.
So many things.
So, it was reported, I believe, yesterday that he... This is a little bit like the, palace intrigue type story that I don't like, but I don't know, I think it's interesting. He apparently openly asked Trump to fire Sessions.
And put him in the job.
Yes, and yes, because he was Oklahoma's attorney general, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he got this job.
Yeah.
And then also some top EPA ethics official, or top ETA... EPA ethics official discloses that he has urged additional investigations into Scott Pruitt. So their internal checks and balances are looking into the boss of the administration. I mean, that's pretty big.
Yeah, that's kind of huge.
Yeah, and he hasn't been able to squash that, apparently. I believe the article points out that there already had been some going on, probably because some of the people who have talked to the press also talked to them.
Right.
But he, I believe the guy, what's his little name? This might be a Kevin Minoli, said that some of the investigations were launched after news reports because they didn't know him.
Right.
So I was looking into it. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, he'll be attorney general soon. I don't know. Is Trump, would he do that?
No way. That guy's on his way out.
Yeah, I don't think he's terribly tied to.
He
doesn't like bad press, right? Trump
doesn't,
unless it's like, whatever.
Yeah, it's tough to identify what he would consider to be bad press, but...
But he doesn't like one of his, I mean, there's no good press around Scott Pruitt, even though a lot of the conservative establishment types like him.
Yeah, but he seems weak.
Yes, exactly.
Trump would not like it.
But I don't know. I don't know if I have anything else here. Do you want to talk about this?
The hostage thing in California.
To me, it's interesting because it ties into direct democracy,
mm-hmm.
Referendums.
Yeah, well, it shows the corrupted nature of them. But
yeah,
to my mind, that's just money flowing to the most crucial decision point. Like, if they can influence government policy, then they will spend the money to do that. And as he pointed out in that article, you only have to spend like a few million dollars and get you can get anything on the ballot in front of California. And if you word it in any which way, certain ways.
So that's what I don't understand about it. So, okay, I understand if there is a referendum. So first of all, let's just sum up the article quick. It's in California. They signed a law saying essentially what municipalities can't raise taxes on soda for like 6 years,
mm-hmm.
kind of pushing off this thing that some of them there have been wanting to do, and the state was kind of going to allow it, but then the soda company said, well, we're going to put a referendum on the ballot saying, like, you never can raise them.
You can never raise taxes. You have to have a two-thirds supermajority to raise any kind of taxes, which would have killed... public budgets.
And that would have... I mean, that's kind of like pulling out, like, the big guns by the soda companies, by
the way.
Yeah,
that's like putting the gun on the table in discussion.
We were just having a talk about fucking soda, like a 2-cent tax on a can. Oh, my God. Put the gun away. it was, like, really dramatic. Like, whoa, they went overboard.
Well, it shows how much power they think they have.
Yeah, so then what I don't understand, then, is... It's literally just if you have $2 million or whatever
it is. Well, you can pay people to, like...
Go out and get signatures? That's what it is? And it's easy enough to get the minimum that anyone can do it if you pay some canvassers?
Yeah, it's only, like, a few hundred signatures per district, basically.
And so... So they pretty much... they would have been able to do it.
Yeah. This would have happened.
Yeah. So should that? Do you think that number should be raised? Wouldn't that just be a simple fix where it's like people actually have to? You still need to organize, I guess, and that still costs money.
Right. And that's the problem. Like sometimes it's just a good idea that somebody has that, you know, a few people can get around. Like that seems like it should have like an easy path to direct democratic participation, but
yeah,
that kind of simple model is easily exploitable by people with time and money.
Yeah, and especially something you can. So like, if the referendum would have been, can the state like or can municipalities raise taxes on soda?
Mm-hmm.
That might have like gone down in flames for the soda companies.
Yeah.
If it was a referendum, but they went big with it.
Property
they put out that tempting carrot of, ooh, no new taxes. And that might have gotten a lot of people who, it just sounds too good. Like,
right.
They might even be sort of for taxes, but they're like, oh, but that, ooh, no new taxes.
No
that's
new
like,
taxes?
That's
yeah.
like something was,
okay.
like, doesn't Wisconsin have a bunch of rules about raising taxes
now
that, like, conservatives have put in?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah.
But, you know, that might, for all this gerrymandering and this crap, like, even if that had gone through, that might have backfired, because, you know, you probably could have gotten 2/3 of a majority of Californians on board with, like, you know, increased tax for your single payer.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
What, I mean, to me it would come down to, I don't know how partisan it is there, but it might come down to, like, a party breakdown.
Yeah.
Of their state, which I'm sure is
pretty
heavy
liberal.
Democratic,
yeah.
But I don't know if it's 2/3.
I think they have a super majority.
Really?
Yeah.
That's why Brown's been able to get shit done there recently.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. The only time I ever see national press ripping on California, or not even national press, but is from Devin Nunes' Twitter feed, which I follow because it's always delightfully stupid. But he'll like he rips on California taxes and like their administrative state and shit like that. And he just fucking hates California. I've never seen him say anything nice about California. It's where he's from. Oh, man.
Say,
I'm sure
he has. Doesn't he represent, like, San Bernardino or something?
He represents, like, farm country, Central Valley somewhere.
I don't know, 22nd District.
Fresno? Oh, yeah, Fresno. Yeah, he was involved in, yeah, I saw something, Yeah, anyway.
Yeah.
Not that exciting.
Not that exciting.
Devin Nunes is not exciting. Except when he's making, like, midnight trips to the White House.
What?
No. Remember, like, that was, like, the first time you ever heard of Devin Nunes?
Oh, right.
It's like, who? Little did we know.
Little did we know.
He would be an idiot for the next year and year and a half, it's been, I think.
Yeah, he's probably not going to get... Well, he's not getting primaried, so he'll probably win that one.
He might. I think his district, last I heard, leans towards him, probably because he's a well-funded incumbent as much as anything else.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think it went from strong... Like, this is like that Cook Political Report. They put out like these...
Yeah, their guesstimates.
And, you know, supposedly they're pretty decent at this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it has gone... It shifted left, just not like past center yet.
Right. He still leans right, at least.
But he's being... I think, actually, I follow his Democratic opponent, at least the favorite, to oppose him,
okay.
On Twitter, and the guy goes after him a lot, and I don't know, I could see him giving him a run for his money.
Yeah, it's, like, more Hispanic than white, according to this number I'm looking at, so...
So, you know that he's keeping his mouth shut on the immigration debate. He's just... He's only in the national security.
Yeah.
He might cast a vote or two, but he's not giving big speeches. Or,
no. Then Nunez has got a, I mean...
Yeah, even though he's Portuguese. He's a wealthy farmer.
Of course he is.
Who is, I think, his first generation... I think he's a first generation immigrant, I think.
Huh.
First or second. His family hasn't...
No, he's born in California.
Well, yeah. Isn't a first generation... First generation American.
Yeah.
Yeah, not first generation immigrant.
So, wait, he came from somewhere? Where?
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, his family's from Portugal.
Makes sense.
So, anyway, anything else coming up in the next week?
Not that I'm aware of. I'm sure the Supreme Court nomination will be chosen pretty quick.
Yeah, I think Trump said he'll do it by I didn't see a calendar. Soon, it's this week.
Mm-hmm.
Or early next week or something. Before our next show.
China's going to keep putting on trade barriers, or putting up tariffs. They've added like another $38 million, I think I saw today. So they're doubling down on that trade war thing.
Is that on the cost of the goods, or is the amount
like
that they would...
the amount that they're going to collect.
Okay, so it's on a bigger portion, mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's only whatever percentage. That seems to not have been... The tariff rhetoric has not been pulled back.
Mm-mm.
One-upsmanship of it all.
The Chinese, the renminbi is currently lower against the dollar than it was before all of this started, which doesn't bode well.
For,
Americans.
For,
because we'll be able to, yeah.
I mean, our dollar's more valuable then.
Sure.
But not,
That's going to be squashed by the Greece tariff, so
yeah.
We're not going to make any more money.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I don't know anything else that's going to be happening in the near term.
So if our dollar is more valuable, doesn't that mean people don't buy our goods as much?
Mm-hmm.
Because they cost more?
Yeah. So we won't get nearly the exports to China and other places. Watch the stock market. It's not been doing well, to say the least.
Really?
And with oil above $75 a gallon, that's when we start heading in towards recession territory.
Yes, because... companies those transportation costs start affecting everything.
Yeah, and it starts hitting people's pocketbooks because nobody wants to pay $4 a gallon.
Does it seem to me, am I crazy, that and I don't really understand world trade and all this and tariffs. It's a little above me, but I get this feeling like he's destroying the last remnants of American manufacturing.
Kind of, yeah. Like Harley isn't like sending manufacturing over. I think they're just putting an assembly plant, right? I mean, maybe they are manufacturing.
That's not the same as manufacturing.
No, like what they did in Thailand and like India is that they'll just send like they'll manufacture the motorcycle parts here,
yeah.
And then just send kits over there where they're just putting assembly.
I think the there's a difference. I think that is what they're doing. They're moving an assembly plant there. And it's like the parts get taxed different than a finished product.
Right.
Or at least now that difference is more.
Yeah, and that's what they're trying to get around.
Those are, I think, Eastern European Harleys or something.
Somewhere like that.
Yeah, I think that's the ones that they were trying to now assemble over there. There's probably other stories out there about other companies. It just seems like... the things he's doing aren't going... None of it's going to get other countries to buy more American shit. Unless the goal is to just get Americans to only buy American shit?
Yeah, it's like the other example, like Iran that we had last week, where they were like, no, we will not allow imports of these products because we can manufacture them here.
But...
That's the next logical step for him.
But that's... come on. Like... So all this stuff that we've been buying cheap from wherever else for most people's lives now, at least like people our age, it's almost our entire life. That shit started in the 80s hard, maybe a little earlier, 70s, 80s. So that's going to suddenly get made here. It's not going to be as cheap as people like, so that sales are going to go way down.
Yeah.
All these people are going to have to either not invest in new factories or and just forget about it and just, okay, now Americans don't get this shit anymore. Or they're going to invest at high risk.
Yeah, nobody wants to do that.
No, they don't want to invest. These people don't want to invest shit nowadays.
No, heck no.
Like, I just want to pocket my already existing investment.
Yeah, so you can see why that would lead to some pretty drastic changes in American consumption patterns.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like this is going to be a way to get people to... Which, this is by no means a means of measuring prosperity across the board, but to get people to invest in the stock market.
Yeah.
Which you're saying is going down now with this transportation and oil prices and...
stock buybacks.
Is it going up and down?
It's
just kind of slowly
down.
Going... Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe. I see a lot of red arrows. Oh, yeah, they're showing off. Oh, that's just today. Or not today, a third. Okay, so now Charles brought up
a month. It's been going down.
Yeah, sure enough.
Like, it reached a high in mid, like, early June of above 25,300, and now it's down to 24.
Can you just put up the one-year trend?
The one-year, it's...
Okay, so it started, blah, blah, blah.
2,100 and some.
It went above 26, now it's down to 24, and those few big drops there.
And yeah,
it's kind of hovered around there, though.
24 is where it's... Yeah.
It's kind of interesting, that drop...
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of where it's still at. It just kind of has had some up and down since then.
Yeah, some corrections. That's where it kind of goes to that. Like, it kind of.
But it hasn't corrected to halfway. It's kind of just keeps going down towards. I mean, that's just a snapshot of today, of course.
Right, but it's kind of hovering around that 2,400 mark.
It's almost like that instantaneous reaction, though, was the correct. Like, that was the correction in and of itself. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of taken some flip flopping to stay there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I don't know.
Not going to go well. I mean, every time oil prices spike, the Dow Industrial goes down, and with, like, more companies are buying stock than, like, people are buying stock, so this is becoming a very problematic valuation, because they're borrowing money to buttress their stock prices. That's why I've always kind of felt like corporate borrowing is what's going to lead us to our next big recession.
Yeah, it's been other kinds of borrowing.
Mm-hmm. It was individual expenditures, but now, corporations are, like, running that credit card.
Yeah, I wonder what their, the standards for them to, you know, get a mortgage, you know, compared to, like...
If they have millions of dollars in assets, especially their own stuff.
Yeah, people are just giving them money. Mm-hmm. You have enough.
Yeah.
You know, your collateral, even though they're probably, like, doubling up that collateral and shit for different loans. Yeah, fucked up.
Yep, well, then that's where we leave it.
All right, well, this has been Tell Me What to Think. Make sure to, if you have anything, to let us know. How did my 8th grade math teacher put it? Comments, complaints, criticisms.
Smart remarks, satire.
Yeah. Email us at tmwttpoe@gmail.com. You can Twitter me at Bloated Nemesis and Twitter Charles at @green_weird, which is WYRD. Hashtag TMWTT on Twitter. Do all the things on all the platforms. And happy 4th of July. Be hearing this after the fact, and independence is apparent, is what not.
Hopefully, it'll still be free by
It should be evergreen, right?
Right.
We should still be free by the time you hear this. We make no promises after that. Alright, have a good week.
Today's sunny, today's rain. Destroy the myth that will break our chains. Break your chains!